Blog Talk Radio.
What would be a racer with Big Sweat without technical difficulties? Oh, my Lord, have mercy. I want to thank, first of all, I'm glad to see everybody hanging out in the studio. First of all, I want to thank everybody for hanging out in the studio. Yes, Steve Big Sweat, Bill Myers, under the weather, and is unable to join us tonight. Our thoughts and prayers are with Steve, and hopefully he gets it feeling better, and we get to have Steve back here in the studio next week. I'm going to be sitting in the big boy's chair, hanging out with Steve Big. Oh, there you go, Chris Yelikoff and Spike Creighton. Are you ready to plug him in? Got a great show planned for you guys. We got two great guests. We got a friend of the 110 Nation, someone I had the opportunity to sit down and watch do some racing last Saturday night. Get an opportunity to sit down, talk with her, see how the season's going, how last Saturday went, and what the plans are. And then we also got Richard Long of Big Easy Racing, Big Easy Motorsports. Get an opportunity to get Richard's thought on some stuff and some racing. And very, very excited about having both these guests on. But I do want to apologize. Not how I wanted things to kick off tonight, but we got Chris in the studio. There you go. Chris in the studio, how you doing tonight?
Hey, Mr. CJ Sports. I panicked there for a minute, Mr. CJ Sports, but, you know, we're going to have this great show. We got the technical difficulties out of the way. We're a few minutes late getting on the air, but, hey, man. You were caught up in that New England game, wasn't you? I mean, this is a rookie quarterback out there throwing like he's Tom Brady. I don't understand Bill Belichick, but that's a whole other show.
Trying to get things together as well tonight as I head off to Kentucky tomorrow morning to go catch the ARCA Series race and the Xfinity Series race on Saturday. There's a lot of craziness going on here, then technical difficulties on top of everything, but we got our first guest in the studio, so let's go ahead and get her in here, and let's get to talking to Kayla. Kayla, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing better now that we got all the difficulties out of the way. I want to first of all thank you for coming on tonight, and second of all, I want to thank you for hanging out, waiting for us to get the show rolling. Kind of a special night, kind of an opportunity to step into Steve's shoes and get to, I think I might be talking a little too fast. Steve usually likes to slow things down a little bit, but just an opportunity to sit down. I got an opportunity last Saturday to go to Florence Motor Speedway to see you race. It was a great time. I got to see a lot of things. I had never seen semi-racing before, so that was something different. Florence Motor Speedway, is that one of your favorite tracks, and how do you usually perform out there at Florence?
Well, Florence is actually the first track that I ever raced at in the Allison Legacy Series, and my dad makes fun of me because I managed to hit the wall, and if you've ever been to Florence Motor Speedway, there isn't a back wall, so I hit the only wall that there was to hit, so he always, you know, likes to joke about that one. But I liked the track, and of course at first, you know, there was no back wall, and I was thinking, these people are insane, there's no back wall at this track. But eventually I kind of just got over it, and now, I mean, I really like the track. It not having a wall doesn't really faze me anymore, but it's definitely still a little, you know, sketchy, but
I mean, does it not faze you because you've already found the wall, or did you just kind of get used to going through the corners there and hugging the cushion? Or is this an asphalt track? So I guess it is, right?
Yeah, it's an asphalt track, and it doesn't have a back wall.
Doesn't have a back wall. Wow.
Yeah.
That's got to be
so
cool.
It is cool. It's just like I said, but the first time you ever run on it, you're like, what are these people thinking? Why is this thing open? You know, why am I here, kind of thing. And it goes straight down, like a straight hill down, and then there's just a bunch of woods.
What's the banking on that track?
I'm really not too sure.
Is it kind of like a fishbowl track?
Is it kind of like what?
A fishbowl?
Kind of not really. I mean, all the tracks are mostly bank, but I wouldn't say it's any more bank than any other track we go to.
Okay.
Yes. To me, it's pretty flat. There ain't much, you know. And Chris is more of the dirt side of the house, and so that's kind of what he's used with the banking and the dirt. There wasn't really much banking to this track.
You could probably tell him more than I could, because it looks a lot different from me.
Well, you know, in the dirt tracks, a lot of times when there's no wall, you have a really, really big bank there, and most of the time it's probably about a 30 or 40 degree pitch, and cars will get up on that top shelf, and they build them up a little wall, and they'll ride that cushion all the way around the top. But being asphalt, I guess tire grip is a lot of what you need when you're racing in your series, right?
Oh yeah, you hit the wrong patch of the track that no one's been running on, and there's all the marble, and then you could be in some trouble. So it's definitely, you need to be running where all the heat's at.
Now, there was a pretty serious incident that happened out there Saturday night. From your angle, did you get to catch much of the incident? I don't know if you was even paying attention to the race that time. You guys had a lot of things going on in the infield. But it was pretty serious. And for those that, are curious, they tried to go three wide down the press stretch. It was wide enough to do it. They just didn't do it real well. And one of the drivers did end up in the wall and up into the fence, actually. And from what I heard, broke his legs. It was pretty serious. Did you see it from your angle? And if you didn't get to see it, just where the cars ended up, how serious did it look? And does that make you even think twice, about being out there on the track, knowing that, something like that is, a serious, reality that could happen?
Well, actually, I was actually talking to someone, and the way that I was standing, I saw the whole thing. And they're sitting there talking to me, keep talking, and I'm just like, my jaw drops, just drops. And I'm like, I was like, what just happened? And all I saw was the car riding the fence all the way down. And once he stopped where he stopped, and the fence is all flopping and stuff, and I was like, oh, my goodness. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. That did not just happen. And the night had just been a long night to begin with, with the rain. How long was that rain delay? Was it almost two hours that rain delay was?
God, it seemed forever. But, someone that I hadn't slept much the day before and had been up since 4:30 in the morning because of going to Charlotte and everything else, and then this rain delay happens. And honestly, it could have been a 20-minute rain delay and still felt like forever for me.
It was definitely long. It wasn't just you, because trust me, everyone in the infield was tired too. And we're all sitting there, this day can't get any better. It can't get any worse, can it? I mean, everything just keeps happening. I'm like, from just incidents from in my race and then from, that. But it was a very crazy incident. And, I do sometimes think, anything like that could happen to me. And that's why, they stress to us that you need to be careful and, make sure that you're clear before you come over. Just because, especially at a track like Florence, there isn't a back wall. If you come over on someone and bounce them off the track, where are they going? They're going into the woods. And that could be a serious injury.
Right.
I mean, seriously. And that's what I'm saying. Like, freak accidents happen. And when you don't even take the precautions to be as safe as you can, just to cause, not to cause a regular accident, what happens if you don't? I mean, then a freak accident is really bound to happen.
Definitely.
I mean, it's just crazy. You just have to, you just have to be careful. I mean, yeah, racing's race, rubbing's racing, whatever. But, still, you still got to, be considerate of others and make sure, put safety before anything else. Because
Well said. Now, Kayla, tell us a little bit about the Allison Legacy series and the type of scale car that you drive, because we have listeners all across the nation, and we talk about all kinds of different cars, and this is probably one that we'll have to visualize being radio. Let's kind of give them a visualization of what this car looks like and what is the Allison Legacy series.
Well, the Allison Legacy series, it's pretty much a scaled-down late model with a Mazda B2200 engine in it, 5-speed, and it's, I would say it's probably about, I'm trying to think of how big you would say it is. It's not too small, but it's not as full as a late model. So I would say 3/4,
mm-hmm.
I guess, of a actual race car, like a NASCAR. There's two body styles. There's either the Thunderbird or the Monte Carlo. I have the Thunderbird body style. Other than that, it's kind of hard to...
Do y'all get to race around at other tracks? Do you have, like, an actual traveling series, or is it just a local racetrack thing?
It's a travel series. We travel from North and South Carolina tracks. So we race at Hickory, and then we race at Florence, Orange County. I don't know if I said Hickory already.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about racing at a place with so much... history, so much legacy? When you're racing at Hickory, is it an Aurora? I mean, how do you feel when you pull up to that racetrack knowing that drivers like David Pearson and others have driven on that asphalt?
It kind of hits me sometimes. I mean, we went to Myrtle Beach over the summer, you know, and all I've ever heard was, you know, Myrtle Beach Speedway, and there I was, and I was like, I'm about to race on this track, and I'm about to go as fast as I ever have before, you know? And I'm like,
right.
Okay, well, and I mean, all I can do is just say, all right, let's do this. I mean, if they can, I can. I guess that's the way I look at it. I just kind of have to go for it.
How's your season going?
I'm actually, right now, I'm third in points. So I've been trying to finish in front of the person in front of me, Seth. But I've been having some bad luck, but I'm trying. At least I finished every single race so far this season. So that's pretty good, considering I only have 3 more races left. I've raced every single race and finished every single one. So I say for my second year in the season, and considering my first year wasn't even a full year, my second year in the season is going pretty well, considering I'm third in points.
That's awesome. So you started the series. You started racing the series 2 years ago. What brought you up to where you are now? What were you racing beforehand?
Well, I started racing go karts when I was 8 years old in an indoor go kart track just for fun, and eventually I started doing the little leagues they had, and I started winning leagues there. So my dad was like, "Okay, well, we're done with this." And he's like, "I'm gonna put my money into something else." Pretty much, and we started driving the little Bandoleros. So I drove the Bandolero for 3 years, and we started getting wins, and same thing pretty much with the go-kart. We were ready to move up to something else. We didn't want to race the Legends cars just because, for one, people say they're expensive, and we really don't have the money considering my dad's a single father with 2 girls.
Wow.
So we didn't have the money for the Legends cars. So we decided we were just going to bump up to something else, and we heard about the Allison Legacy, and it just seemed like the right place to go for right now. So that's where we're at.
One more question before I give it back to Jason. Racing must have been something that you inherited.
Yeah, my dad talks about how his dad would be very proud that I'm racing cars. He used to say that, you know.
So it was
that
the grandfather that started it all.
Yeah, so my dad's always wanted to, and he used to just do it for fun, and I used to just go, you know, to the go-kart track and just kind of watch him, and eventually I just bugged the mess out of him to let me get him one, and, you know, he didn't think they were going to let me get in a go-kart, but sure enough, the day that I finally broke him down to take me next door to the go-kart track, they got kid karts, and sure enough, my butt was in one, so...
You do have an interesting story, and you know, I applaud this. One, it's being a parent. I know how difficult it is to be a parent, but even more for your father to do what he does and tries to. Your sister, I believe she cheerleads or something, doesn't she?
Yes, she is actually. Yes, she's cheerleading for Northwestern High School. So she is a high school cheerleader, and that
is
a hobby in itself.
Yeah, you see, your dad has got his hands full trying to, you know, make sure that both y'all are able to do, you know, what your guys' dreams are and what you guys want to do. And you know, I know what it's like to have two parents, and also know what it's like to just be the only parent. So I definitely applaud him because, you know, racing is not a cheap sport at all. And I can only imagine not only how financially draining it is, but a day like Saturday where we didn't get out of there until, I want to say, I know we left about 1:30-ish, it seemed like. So I can only imagine how long the day it was for him physically as well. And to see him out there and see him so active and, you know, I got the opportunity Saturday night for the first time for us to actually meet after, you know, a couple of years of you being on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network. It was really cool to be able to finally meet up with him. You know, he's put a lot of trust in, you know, you coming on the show. And last year where we went to the Chip Ganassi event, you know, to me at that point I was still a stranger, you know, hole in the wall for him and to allow his daughter, you know, to kind of be in our trust for the evening. You know, that meant a lot to us here at the 110 Nation. The series, you were talking about Seth being above you in the points. One, how competitive is this series? And two, I feel that feathers were ruffled. I kind of got the impression on Saturday night. You and the 44 car, you guys not on the best of terms out there?
Well, we are, you know, We're pretty competitive. We try, like I said, we try to keep it safe. We, you know, try to do the right thing and make sure everyone's safe. But yeah, me and Seth, he's a very, very sweet kid. His father's, you know, the nicest man you'll probably meet. I mean, you know, good family. It's just, you know, I honestly, after the race, I went up to the kid and I said, hey, you know, he told me, he's like, good race. I was like, thank you. I was like, thank you very much. I was like, you too. And I was like, but hey, next time, can you please make sure that you're clear before you come over? You know, I just want to please. Cause I mean, like I said, this track doesn't have a back wall. I mean, and, you know, just if you could just please, you know, be a little bit more, you know, precautious. And his dad didn't like me talking to him. So that's how that ended. Like I said, they're still a good family, but it seems like every single time we get together on the racetrack, it just keeps going in a circle that they don't listen, or apparently we don't listen. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but off the track we're fine, but for some reason on the track we're like magnets.
You know, it's funny listening to her say this, Chris, because I'm like more than twice her age and listen to her say, this kid this and this kid that, and I'm sitting there thinking, Kaylee, you're not much older than a kid yourself. He's still in high school, and to hear you say that's funny. And being at the track, at the Fayetteville Motor Speedway, it's a dirt track, and they don't have the backstretch don't have walls as well. And that was something that was kind of weird to me the first time, but I thought that was, okay, it's dirt track racing. I mean, how crazy can it really get? And I've seen some cars get off the track and kind of get lost on the backstretch, but to go to my first asphalt track that didn't have a wall on the backstretch, that was kind of weird to me. And it took me to get some used to, because every asphalt track I'd ever been, and I'm sitting there in my mind while I'm sitting there, you know, watching you guys practice and everybody, you know, get the night started off, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, has there ever been a track that I've been to that's been asphalt and there's not been a wall in the back stretch? And I couldn't recall because, you know, I've been to a handful of them, so that was something different. The rest of the season, you said you got three races left. Where are you going to be traveling for those final three races? And what are you guys' plans on for 2017 if you guys have made any yet?
My next race is at Hickory, on October the 1st. I can't really recall the last two races, where they're at, but I know the next one's at Hickory. Trust me, I've got so much going on in school and stuff, trying to remember stuff, but, definitely, October the 1st is Hickory. So, that's that. And then, sorry, what was your second question?
2017, have you guys started game planning on what, you know, what season is going to bring? I know it's a little bit out there, but I also know with the financial situation, especially of this sport, that you guys got a game plan as far as you guys can ahead of time to make sure that all those ducks are in the line.
We've been talking, but we're really honestly not too sure at this point. I know I'm definitely going to be racing. We just don't know how we're going to do it. That's all I could really tell you. I mean, we're trying and I'm not too sure how we're going to do it though. So we plan on being there though. So.
Chris,
hopefully somebody will come along. Huh? Sorry about that. I hit the mute button about three different times. We hope that you get your 2017 plans finalized. And we hate to see racers not knowing what their plans are. And but the confidence that you have that you'll be racing next year is what we all feed off of. And I, you know, maybe somebody's listening tonight that's going to be able to help you out. And if not, just keep trying because you're going to the right resources and you're using the right tools to get it out there that you are a racer. You have a Facebook page and you're awesome on interviews. So, I mean, guys, if somebody's out there listening and around her area, I tell you what, you got yourself a driver right here, Miss Kayla Lyons. It's nice to meet you, too.
It was nice to meet you, too.
Kayla, I do appreciate you coming on here tonight. I know it was kind of last minute, and I knew you had a busy day with school and everything, so I contacted your dad first thing to, kind of go that direction. I didn't want to interrupt you at school and everything, and was trying to be very respectful with that. It had been 3 o'clock or so. I would have went through you at first before, and not to be, you know, Not to be disrespectful with that, I was going to bypass your dad, but,
How old are you, Kayla?
I'm actually 17. I'm a senior in high school. So.
Senior. Awesome. Great job. Be graduating in 2017?
Yes.
Awesome.
I will.
Great.
It's kind of scary. Well,
I know y'all grow up fast, and I think me and Jason both have daughters around your age, so, yeah, it's definitely You hang on to racing as long as you can, and maybe you'll go to the top with it. You're definitely young enough, and like I said earlier, you have a lot of talent, and you've displayed some great communication skills with us, and we just appreciate having you on. And Jason, I think you found a great racer here.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Kayla, I definitely want to wish you luck on the last three races of the season. Hopefully we'll be able to work it out another weekend that I'll be able to see you guys once again before this season's out. It was honestly a blast being out there. It was really cool to be able to, you know, be face-to-face with you once again and finally meeting your father. Like I said, I wish you guys the best of luck the rest of the season, and I know that we'll be having you back on one of the shows here before the year is out, and looking forward to that, and you enjoy the rest of your evening.
All right, well, if I could, can I thank a couple people real quick?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. I would like to thank my Amsoil rep, Todd Fowler with East Coast Synthetics, John Deese with Diesel Entertainment, everyone at SimplyAmazingWoodwork.com, CWRR. I'd also like to thank my dad's friend, Chuck Rivers, who has been a big help lately with, you know, the car or whatever we've needed. My spotter, Chuck Azar, my unofficial teammate, Amsoil teammate, Keith Phillips and his family. I mean, they've been awesome to us with everything that we've been through, and they've helped us. You know, I'm talking about just little things. You know, we need food, they've got it. They've got gas, you know, and we need it, and it's ours. And just whatever we need, they're there to help us, and I'm really glad that we've been able to grow close to get to them this year. So.
All right.
Well, Kayla.
And hopefully you'll have some more backers coming pretty soon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You enjoy your night, Kayla.
You too.
Bye.
All right.
That was Ryan Booth. I think we've had her on. Picture with Big Sweat one night. I can't remember, but we've had the pleasure to have her for the 110 Nation Sports Show. And I got the honor to see her in person Saturday night. It was kind of one of those things that I had the opportunity Friday to go out to Charlotte for the Carolina Nationals. I hung out there for like 6 hours, and Saturday rolled around and I didn't get off on work on time. It was one of those things I could have went back to Charlotte and saw the Carolina Nationals and spent about 2-3 hours there after driving 2 hours there and 2 hours back. Would have been spending more time driving than I would have been there. Or we could have changed our plans, which we ended up doing, and kind of making a family trip, going down to Florence Motor Speedway to show some support for those that support the show and support the 110 Nation. And that's exactly what we decided to do. And so we packed up, went down, made an afternoon of it, got down there about 6:30, and I had been up since 4:30 that morning, and we rolled back in about 3:45 in the morning for enough time for me to catch a 45-minute nap. You're right back at work.
That's the racer's life. That's what I'm talking about. Look, and that's the key to it, Jason. You made a great point there. The 110 Nation has been a lot about making a point to recognize the other drivers. And what we mean by the other drivers isn't the nobodies. It's really the people that have made racing what it is today, the continuous grassroots racer. And for you to be able to go out and highlight one of these drivers is not only a great deal for the driver, for us to be able to profile them and get their name out there, but it's great for the 110 Nation family to be out and supporting the drivers, like you said, that support our radio group and all that you do at 110 Nation.
And not only that, for us to be able to support the local tracks, you know, I don't want to be one of those people that we say, support your local tracks, and then we're not actually out there supporting our local tracks as well. And granted, it might not be my local track as it was a two-hour drive, but it's somebody else's local track, and it's important to those drivers, it's important to those that go to that track, and it's important to those family members that are involved with either the people that go to the track or the driver.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, that was also an important factor to us. Yes, we could have went back to Charlotte, and I could have gave
tomorrow's
Charlotte
racer, Jason.
Wait. Yeah.
Tomorrow's racer is at one of these racetracks that we've gone to. And that's the big key to it. Finding these kids and these racers before they're famous, before they're big time. And you know, like so many times on this show, we've had people who have great social skills, and then we have people who we're trying to dig a story out of. And communication is a big thing in racing, and that's part of the marketing idea. And, you know, like I said, it's a win-win situation for everybody. This is going to be kind of a subject that we're going to bring Richard Long on for. Do we have Richard in?
I'm not sure. Richard, if you're in the studio, I have a bunch of people in the studio.
Yeah, press one, Richard, if you're there. I think he is.
There we go, yeah. All right, I got Richard. We're going to put him into the studio now. Chris, I'm going to let you lead the way, and then we'll go from there. Richard, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing absolutely well. Mr. Richard, glad that you were able to come on last-minute deal. Steve Billmeyer, our normal host for the show, he's under the weather, and so me and Jason kind of put this one together real quick to keep the sponsors happy. We're syndicated on a couple of other radio stations, and Jason will kind of get into that later on in the show here and give a shout out to them. But Richard, thank you for taking your time with us today and coming on. And I want to know about this Big Easy Motorsports and and let's talk racing.
Well, the Big Easy Motorsports, I've decided what I'm going to do is I'm trying to put together a NASCAR Camping World Truck Series race team and base it in the greater New Orleans area for the extra exposure that you don't get necessarily up in, you know, Race City, USA, up in Mooresville and around Charlotte. We've got somewhere around 13, 14 million people a year that come into New Orleans as visitors. So it's just another avenue and another way to promote NASCAR and promote the truck series, which, in my opinion, I believe is the best racing in NASCAR. I don't know, a few weeks back, if you happened to see the truck race up in Canada on the road course with John Hunter Nemechek and Cole Custer. But that was a finish.
That was a barn burner there, sir.
Yeah. And it was all the way down the front stretch, you know, to the start-finish line. So that's what makes this exciting racing. And again, it's like I said, it's what I believe is makes NASCAR truck series racing better than, you know, either one of the other series that they promote nationally.
Now, Richard, let me ask you something real quick. Now, since you mentioned the race up at the road course in Montreal, you know, the truck series has just now kind of gone back to road course racing, and it seems to be that the fan culture has changed over the last few years. Now, I'm not saying that maybe NASCAR's headed toward an IndyCar-type schedule where it's really nothing but road course racing, but tell me about what you feel about the road course racing being added into just not just the truck series, but being more popular right now in the bigger series.
Well, I believe that the road course, they need to add another road course to the truck series, as well as they need to do another dirt track, you know, and possibly – since that one's in Ohio, the dirt track that they do now is up in Ohio, they need to put one down in the South and you know, possibly Louisiana or Mississippi. You know, we've got some great tracks down here that would be great venues to put another dirt race. But speaking on the truck series, as far as the road courses go, what a lot of people might not know is these teams use the same truck on the dirt track as well as the road course because they only run one of each. So, you know, it's not feasible money-wise to come in and build a truck for a road course and then come in and build one for a dirt track when you only run one of each race each year. So everybody splits that truck and uses it for both of them. But NASCAR, in speaking to them over the, you know, past year and a half or so, they're trying their best to get back to what the original schedule of the Camping World Truck Series was, which was 25 races in a season. Right now we only do 23, so, you know, if there's the opportunity to bring another road course in, Road America, I think, would, you know, possibly be one, or Road Atlanta, you know, could possibly be one for a good road course. And then, like I said, you know, we've got, throughout the Southeast, we've got several nice dirt tracks that would be a great host.
Now, I did notice that you didn't mention NOLA, and I was kind of wonder if that's if that track down there has kind of burned its bridges, or do you think that would be a good road course track as well? You just maybe forgot about it.
Well, no, I didn't forget about it. that's kind of a you know, it's one of those subjects. I'll just say it like this. You know, the old adage: if you can't say nothing nice, then don't say anything at all.
They burned some bridges. We'll go ahead and move on from that. So you're an activist on getting on the grassroots of reuniting with NASCAR.
Yeah.
Tell us where you started all this at, and how you come about this idea. Obviously, you've been in racing and been involved in it for a while.
Well, I'm originally from South Carolina in Myrtle Beach, and, you know, raised up in the Carolinas, I can, you know, pretty much walk outside, pick up a rock and throw it, and I'll hit a track in either direction I throw it. And it don't necessarily, it can be an asphalt track or it can be a dirt track, whatever it may be. But, you know, it's part of life when you live in the Carolinas.
Yeah, right.
You know, I've been to Rockingham when they run the Winston Cup Series there. You know, I've been to Charlotte, I've been to Bristol, I've been to Martinsville and Richmond and all of these tracks. So it's all just a part of life for me. And some years ago, I looked at possibly putting a team in Myrtle Beach, but I didn't get any, you know, a good positive response from it. Well, now that I'm living in New Orleans, by the way, I tell everybody I'm the reason that the Saints won the Super Bowl because I moved here in 2009, and so I'm why the Saints won the Super Bowl.
Well, but, I tell you, I'm a Peyton Manning fan, so that didn't help you out too much, Richard. Of all the teams we had to play, it was the Saints, and it tore me apart. Real quick on that, my wife said, well, why don't you know, Peyton's retired, why don't you just go and be a Saints fan again? I said, look, Mom, I said, once you've turned your team turned your back on a team in a Super Bowl, you just can't ever go back.
Yeah. But, so I moved down to New Orleans, and a funny story, they were, you know, still recovering from Katrina, of course, and I come in across what they call the twin spans on I-10 across Lake Pontchartrain, and they still had partial pontoons from the Corps of Engineers that they had built a temporary bridge to get across. They were still working on the new bridge of the twin spans. And so I get into New Orleans East, and I come into town, and there's all these cars. I see them everywhere, and they've got Trix, and they've got Kellogg's, and they've got, you know, Rice Krispies and Cheerios. And I'm like, oh, man, I have fell into NASCAR heaven. Was I sorely disappointed. I have to use an app on my phone or, you know, satellite radio in order to listen to a NASCAR race if I want to listen to it on the radio. There just is no coverage here on the radio stations. And so, you know, I'm my goal right now is to try and get people aware of NASCAR and make them more aware of it and possibly, you know, try to work together. And we're building that sponsorship pool right now and trying to get people to come on board with that. And in the meantime, we've started running a late model car, and so we're running a crate late model at this point in time. We're looking to move to possibly super or ultra late models in 2017, and run the fast track series as well as you know, possibly running some World of Outlaw races and things like that. And you know, with Scott and some of the other greats in that series up there. And that's what we're working on at this point in time, as well as getting sponsors for the Camping World Truck Series race team.
Now, I believe we talked earlier, and you had said that you wanted to make your debut at a certain race next year. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, we're actually trying to do that. We're going to try to do the Eldora dirt race next year. In the Camping World Truck Series. And I know it's a little ways off, but the way the Camping World Truck Series is, and the reason I like it a lot as far as schedule-wise goes, is because they run two races in February. They run the Daytona race, and then they run Atlanta. And then after that, they take a month off, and then they go to Martinsville and run that race, and then they'll take another month off. So that gives you time to, you know, smooth you with your sponsors or go out and help promote them and things like that. And then it isn't until actually the second half of the season that the truck series really gets into a steady pace of where they're racing week in and week out. And so we're going to try to I'm going to try to take my dirt driver and see how he does in the Camping World Truck Series up at Eldora, if we can make that happen.
That's awesome. Now, from two things I've gathered from the conversation, one of them is that obviously there's actually a better economic opportunity right now in NASCAR and Camping World Truck Series, and diversity with the race trucks is where it all begins, right? I mean, you can build one truck and race it at all five different kinds of tracks.
Right. You can do that. But, you know, we're looking at probably having about six trucks, because you've always got to take a backup truck with you to any event that you go to in any of NASCAR's three major series. You've got to have, you know, a backup car or truck to run whatever division you're running in. But, you know, you run so many half mile and mile and a half and 1 mile tracks, that it's a lot more economical to go ahead and build a couple of trucks for, you know, a short track truck and build a couple of intermediate trucks and then build a couple of super speedway trucks because you've got more race opportunities for those to use those trucks. So it's a little bit more economically feasible to do that. But then again, you know, you're still talking around $125,000, $130,000 for a truck that's race ready.
Right.
And then you got a lease package that you got to do with your engine and transmission and rear gear and stuff like that. But it's still a lot cheaper than what you put out there in the Sprint Cup Series. And in our case, with us being located, like I said, again, here in the greater New Orleans area, everybody knows there's so much that goes on in New Orleans as it is already. You know, from Mardi Gras to crawfish, that's what we call the seasons down here. It's not summer, spring, and fall, and winter. It's Mardi Gras season, it's crawfish season, it's football season, and then, you know, it's festival season. So that's the four seasons here in New Orleans. But there's always something going on here that gives a potential sponsor, the opportunity to capitalize on being located with a race team that's in New Orleans versus being one that's up in, like I said earlier, the Mooresville, North Carolina area where most of the teams are based at. And it's just because of the fact that, you know, you've got 8 Saints games that's going to be home games here. You've got the New Orleans Pelicans. Not that they're doing all that great, but you've still got the NBA presence here with that. And then you've got Jazz Fest that's in the spring. You've got the French Quarter Fest that's in the spring. Coming up right here in October, you've got the Voodoo Fest that'll be coming up. In the summertime, you've got Essex Festival. So you've got so much going on. And then that's not to mention when you get into the month of December and the 1st of January, you've got 3 bowl games that are right here in New Orleans.
The marketing opportunities
just alone for what people spend, you know, in sponsoring the NASCAR Camping World Truck, they get that doubled again if they come on board and sponsor our race team just because of the fact we're based here in New Orleans and we'll have a presence in those markets.
It's kind of like franchising, but just using the truck as the marketing tool. It sounds similar to what Barney Visor's doing and Furniture Row and he built his team from scratch. A lot of his employees are straight up out of Colorado. They were in house. Now, you know, I understand that throughout the years they've had Tony Stewart pit crews and stuff like that. Now they're, you know, a Joe Gibbs satellite team. But in the beginning, it wasn't that way. And Barney really, when he said that he was going to operate his team out of Colorado, a lot of people laughed at him, but he's been successful out of it. Is that somebody that you kind of look to and say, I can do this?
Well, he is one of the people, and I love what he done there. But what really got me on board was saying, you know, this is possible. I know it's possible. It can be done, and it has been done before. Is one of my heroes growing up was Bobby Hamilton, and you know, after he stopped running in the Cup Series, he went and he started his own truck series team, and he won, but his team was based in Tennessee, so he proved that, you know, he could win a championship, and he could run that team from Nashville and still be competitive and be a competitive race team. And at one time he had 3 trucks racing in the Camping World Truck Series. So when you can build a team and run 3 trucks in the series and you win a championship as well, that shows that you don't necessarily have to be right in the middle of all the NASCAR race teams in order to be competitive. And I just think that the opportunity for sponsors here in New Orleans is far greater than what you're going to get if you go and you stay in the Charlotte, North Carolina area.
Jason, it sounds like he's right on the money there. Richard has a great idea, and it's really something that I don't think too many people have thought of. And, you know, I hate to spill the secrets out here on the radio waves, but using your city, and everybody knows that New Orleans is a travel town. And it just seems like a great marketing idea. What do you think about that, Jason?
Oh, most definitely. You know, excuse me. you got to use, you know, whatever marketing you can, and you know, and think kind of outside the box sometimes to, you know, make this all possible. I do have a question because you're talking about Eldora, and you know, this is always a very debatable conversation, especially since Tony Stewart and the racing community has made Eldora where it is today, and it's become. The debate always ends up being after we watch the race in the middle of the week is whether or not the Camping World Truck Series or any really Indy series should do this more often. And I'm curious for someone, especially that's planning this far out to be at Eldora next year, should the Camping World Truck look into having another dirt track race like they do at Eldora, or is it the fact that it's a one time of the year thing that is kind of a special thing makes it what it is?
Well, in my opinion, I believe that they do need another race just because of the economics of, you know, building one of these trucks. And, you know, you can say, well, you know, you're using it for two races anyway, so that helps with the economics of it. But there are so many people that cut their teeth, and all these guys have cut their teeth on the dirt tracks. And so when you can bring a major league sport to a dirt track and run it on a dirt track, I just think that it, you know, it, just like with Eldora, it just makes everybody more excited about watching the racing.
35,000 people will attest to what you just said, Richard. 35,000 people. And then you go to the very next race and there was maybe 5,000 to 6,000 people in the stands. To me, it makes perfect sense as well from the business side, because you're selling out in these venues. When you're racing side by side with the Cup, everybody's waiting for the Cup guys. Yeah, and marketing the Craftsman Truck Series shouldn't be based off of, well, the Cup guys are more important. There's so much of its own identity through the Truck Series that it's almost like it's striving to get more separation from maybe the Cup cars.
And I feel the same way. You know, Chad Little, who is the director of the Truck Series,
he's
a really great guy, and I have a lot of respect for him. I grew up with him, and you know, when he raced at Myrtle Beach Speedway, I was there all the time, and a lot of these guys. But you know, I'm like you. There is an identity that the Truck Series has that could be so much more greater. And if it would actually separate itself a little bit from the other two series and let them do, you know, when they first kicked this off, it was like a winter heat thing, you know, and they started running, you know, in the odd part of the season. And you used to see guys like Mike Skinner and Ron Hornaday and those guys, they would tell stories about where, you know, they might have a problem, they'd wreck their truck in practice or something. And then they would take it to a local guy's garage and work on it, put it on the frame machine, and pull the frame back and things like that. And so that's what connects with people in these hometowns, and that's what puts the people in the stands. And that's where NASCAR, I feel like, got away from, you know, they're chasing the dollar now instead of actually thinking about the people that are out there watching the races and paid to go to the races in these small towns at these smaller tracks.
It's kind of like it's so close, but yet it still has its own identity, because we know that the future of the Truck Series has turned into kind of like a farm system for the major leagues. You know, it's kind of like the farm system for who's going to make it to the Cup level. But at the same time, you know, back in the old days of racing, Richard Petty raced at many places. It wasn't just a certain sanctioned 12 major tracks.
Right.
And
NASCAR raced everywhere, even on dirt.
Right. And they have this thing called NASCAR Home Track, so they're already affiliated with a lot of other tracks that they could bring this venue to. ARCA has played on dirt, but ARCA has two races a year on dirt. So there's definitely some correlation, and it's definitely market. I think ARCA is more attested to the stock car side. But once again, when you talk about the truck series, I feel it has its own identity, and it has for years. It was brought in as a different series.
Exactly, and it was. And like I said, when they first started, you know, it had that homegrown feel to it. But as it's progressed and it's turned into a farm system, you know, like look at KBM. Kyle is sitting over there at Joe Gibbs racing that M&M car week in and week out. And he's got those trucks in that truck series. They're winning week in and week out. And he's developing drivers for Joe Gibbs. And their next step is they go into the Xfinity series. And just like, you know, Eric Jones next year, he'll be driving for Barney, you know, as a teammate to Martin Truex. So.
But and with Eric Jones, the situation is exactly what we're talking about, Richard.
Exactly.
They found Eric Jones at the Snowball Derby. He got a ride because he outran somebody. That's not a typical NASCAR sanctioned track there. So once again, if you give the availability of these guys racing some of your local talent, no telling what we'll have. You know, it's just going to make better racing.
Yeah, I believe it will too. And that's another thing is with my team, that's, you know, I go to these tracks here around the area. I've been up to Hattiesburg, and I go to LA 36 over in Lacombe quite often. And that's where I found, you know, some of the talent. And you were talking to a young lady just before I come on about her racing and her career, and she's still in high school. But I get excited watching these young girls coming through the series. And LA 36 and Hattiesburg's got a little girl. Her name is Stephanie Niekase Cooper.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
and
she's been a guest on the show here.
She's, you know, she's a former track champion up at Hattiesburg. And I like to watch that little girl race. And she knows how to wheel a car.
Yes,
so
sir. Her brother's the left tire changer for
Denny
Hamlin.
Yeah.
We've had him on as well.
So, you know, she knows how to wheel a car. And Terry Woods, you know, she's another driver that knows how to wheel a car good. And so I like the opportunity that I've got a pool of talent here to pick from. And that's who I've got. I've chosen as my driver to run in the late model circuit is a local guy out of Luling. And a lot of people will know who he is, Mickey Trostler. That's who I've got, you know, who's going to wheel my car for me. And that's who we hope that we can get at that Eldora race and let him show his talents off. Because when I first seen Mickey racing, I was in the booth at LA 36. I had no clue who he was. Never seen him, never met him, never heard anything about him. But I watched that young man wheel a car around a track, and I said, this dude, I don't know where he's at. I don't know where he's been, but he should be further along in his career than what he is, you know, if he's an older gentleman. And he's 30 years old, but he's got a lot of talent and a lot of skill. And so that's the direction I'm going as far as a driver. And we'll be debuting our truck at we'll be doing it at the Gretna Heritage Fest on October 8th and 9th in Gretna, Louisiana, which is right across the river from New Orleans. And you can take the ferry across. They've got a ferry that runs that whole weekend back and forth to Gretna Fest. So everybody can come out. They'll be able to see our truck with our Big Easy Motor Sports paint scheme on it. We've got a couple of sponsors I'm actually talking to this week about getting them to come on board with us. So we're working on that avenue and trying to get all of our sponsors and stuff together so that when we do get ready to go to Eldora, we don't have to worry about, you know, buying tires or having a truck that's not equipped when we go up there that won't be competitive.
And tell us real quick about, was this the formal actual announcement of Mickey being the driver? And where did the number come from, the number 73? Go ahead.
This is actually right now on this show is when I told everybody who's going to be driving my truck and driving my late model series cars for me. But the number come from a couple of different avenues. It's two of the greats in NASCAR, and one of them, the number 73, is the number we're going to have on our truck, and, And that number seven come from Alan Kowicki, who was an independent guy who built his own cars. He was an engineer. He tuned his own engines and things like that, and he won a championship back in, I think it was 92, in the Cup Series. And he was basically, you know, a one-man show, independent team competing against the Hendricks and the Childrens and Childresses and those guys. And he's kind of like Barney with the Furniture Row team. And I always pull for the underdog. And so that's why I decided on the number seven. And then, of course, the late Dale Earnhardt, that's where the number three come from. And I just combined them both because both of them, you know, were heroes in the sport to me. And when Earnhardt passed away, NASCAR changed completely. And you know, it's something that
NASCAR,
I think that.
Go ahead, Rich. I'm sorry.
I think that it's something that, you know, they look back on and they say, even to themselves, even though they're you know, executives, they probably think in their minds and in their hearts they wish Earnhardt was still here as well to help guide, you know, the sport like he used to when he was alive and racing.
I think you're right, Richard. And what I think happened there was Dale Earnhardt had reached out to so many, just following his life, you knew that he was a racer at heart. But he also had a life outside of racing, and it was where he felt the most comfortable at, and that was his farm. And from the South, being from the South, we connect to that. And we didn't connect to the Casey Canes and the Jeff Gordons and the new breed of drivers as they rolled in because they were racers. They didn't have that connectivity to the Southern man like Dale did. And I think that, you know, as well as Junior's done in his career, NASCAR wasn't able to use that marketing. You know, Junior was the one that come on with his hat turned around backwards, and we all know how them old men were about us turning our hats backwards. I was in the announcer stand just a couple of weeks ago, and I was sitting next to a person who said, "Look, I find it to be offensive when somebody has their hat turned around backwards." And I'm, you know, this is 20 years later, you know. But sometimes those are just the way, and it's just the connectivity from the fan to the sport. And it's going to take a lot of grassroots reuniting to get that back, because I don't believe for any means the interest in racing in the Southern fan has been lost. It's just they don't have a driver to connect to, and so many of these drivers are from all over the nation. It doesn't take away from the national popularity, but it does take away from the grassroots racer who supported not just their local tracks but racing all the way through the top rank.
Yeah, you know, these guys that you've got coming into the sport nowadays, just like Eric Jones, for instance, you know, he got a ride. He outrun Kyle Busch, and Kyle noticed him. And Kyle, you know, said, "Okay, you're going to, you know, come drive my truck for me." And he started driving Kyle's truck, and that's the way. And William Byron and things. But with Earnhardt, there was a story there to where he raced for years and years and years, and he struggled, and he'd done everything he could to be at a race week in and week out until finally he got an opportunity and got a break to race at the NASCAR level, and he made good on it. And so everybody could associate a guy getting up and going to work with a purpose in mind of he's going to work to get money to go race a car. And that's where that connectivity's at with Earnhardt that you don't have today with the drivers that are coming up. They're in a car, they're out there racing, and then they just move to another car and a different division, and they've got a sponsor with them that says, "Okay, we'll take you racing in the next division that you want to go in." And that's the way it winds up going, instead of them actually connecting with the everyday guy and having to work their way up to where they need to be.
And I think what Richard's saying here, Jason, and our listeners, is if you go back to Earnhardt's career, Earnhardt made his Cup debut, I believe, in 1975. Well, he had one race deal, and it was gone. And so for 2.5 to 3 years, Earnhardt was searching for that next opportunity, not knowing if he would ever get that chance again, which means for 3 years he was relentless at every track that he pulled up to. And that's what made Dale Earnhardt Dale Earnhardt, because people in the Carolinas, they knew who he was in the 1978-79 Daytona 500 when he was up there running up front with those guys. The local Carolina guys, they knew who he was. That was the son of Ralph Earnhardt. But you know, even the announcers had to find out who that kid was in the number two car that they didn't even believe was on the lead lap at the time. I mean, you go back and watch the 1979 Daytona 500 and, you know, who is this Earnhardt kid? He definitely come from the bottom and rose to the top, and it was his work, hard work and dedication. And I believe wholeheartedly that if he would have been given another chance in the early part of his career, we would have never seen a seven-time champion the way we did, because so many times people get the rug pulled out from up underneath them and they come back and fight harder than they ever have. And that's the Earnhardt story. Jason, you got anything to finish off with?
No, I was just, you know, when you guys talk about the truck series, you know, I get an opportunity. We've had on the One Finish and Sports Radio Network a lot of K&M Pro drivers, a lot of ARCA Series drivers. Matter of fact, you guys have no idea how excited I am about being in Kentucky tomorrow for the race. There are so many different drivers. I mean, we just had Gus Dean on the show last night. How many drivers that I'm going to go up and personally thank that have been on the show. Like half the field has been on the show. But when you talk about the Camping Truck World Series, or the Camping World Truck Series, you have no idea how excited I get when I get an opportunity to watch the Truck Series race. One, not only what we saw between Cole Custer and Nemechek, that action out there, but to see such young talent and knowing that we are going to have an opportunity in the upcoming years to see this talent continue to develop and continue to move up. And the Xfinity Series is going to get this talent. And then the Sprint Cup Series is going to get this talent. And know that if nothing else, no matter how you feel about the rules in NASCAR, no matter how you feel about the sponsorship in NASCAR, we all know with the Truck Series where it is right now today, that there's not going to be a shortage of very, very talented drivers. And that right there is, I think, the most exciting thing to me when I get an opportunity to sit down and watch a Camping Truck World Series race.
Yeah,
I agree.
And I agree with that wholeheartedly. You know, the talent for the next generation of Sprint Cup or whatever it's going to be called next year, those guys are in the Camping World Truck Series. There's a lot of them in the ARCA Series. And, you know, I started to take my truck team and go with the ARCA Series first, but that seems to be a division in the Truck Series in ARCA that hasn't really taken off. I've seen several races that's been canceled just this year alone. And so, you know, I said, well, you know, if I'm going to work on this, I've got to go ahead and go to the Truck Series in the Camping World and go that avenue. That way I know they're racing week in and week out. They've got a set schedule, and they'll run the race. Even if it rains, you know, they'll run it the next day or may even put a set of rain tires on.
Yeah, that's cool.
And since you brought that up, everybody's been talking about that rain tire, and we got to see that road course race. I was very entertained by it, and I think a lot of fans were entertained by it. But you being in the position you are, and knowing that you guys are trying to get everything situated for 2017, what are team owners and drivers' opinions on that? Especially we watched that Xfinity Series race; it got a lot of rain. There was a lot of slip sliding around. Is this something that NASCAR needs to continue to kind of explore? And make that, you know, maybe expand that a little bit, the Truck Series race, maybe even Sprint Cup Series on these road course races adventure into? Or, you know, after watching the Xfinity Series race and everything that went on, is that something maybe that we need to pull back from and kind of go back to the way it was and not worry about trying to be out there in rain tires and be out there during the rain?
Well, I believe that in the Sprint Cup Series, I don't think they need to run in the rain just because of the weight and the horsepower of the cars themselves. you know, that's a lot of horsepower when you're trying to – you've seen what happened in the Xfinity Series, and they don't have near as much horsepower or weight as what the Cup cars do. But I do believe that in the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series that this is something that they need to keep in mind because it brings a different aspect to NASCAR. And right now at this point in time, in my opinion, they need to do everything they can to get, you know, people to come back to the sport and watch the sport again and not, you know, show up at a racetrack and use, you know, it's like Bristol a few weeks ago. You've never seen Bristol with an empty seat. It was always a waiting list. And now you see half the seats are empty. So whatever they can do to bring the fans back to the track, I think that, you know, that's – or even get them to watch on TV, that's an opportunity to do that in the two lower divisions of NASCAR. I don't recommend it for the Cup Series just because, like I said, the weight and the horsepower of the cars – you know, is a lot more than what it is in those other two divisions.
Well, and I'll add to that theory before we go. I think that maybe there is a place for all three divisions, just maybe not all the tracks. I definitely wouldn't want to see them out there racing in rain at Talladega or Daytona. Probably not some of the mile-and-a-half speedways. But as for, like, a Bristol or road courses, technology's moving faster, and IndyCar has, and Formula One, just basically all other forms of racing race competitively in the rain. I think the biggest issue about NASCAR is they've never raced in the rain before, so having them guys cut back their speeds would be a trial and error type deal. You get Martin Truex out there on some fresh rain tires, he's probably at Bristol, he's probably going to try to go as fast as what he would go any other time, and that's not going to work. But I definitely – this is something that NASCAR's fooled with for a few years. I think it's almost, you know, maybe a decade now that they've been fooling around with rain tires. And I think that they're getting closer. I definitely want to see it used in the Xfinity Series for the road courses and for the Truck Series if possible. The thing about the Xfinity Series is they're racing at certain road courses that are high in precipitation. In other words, Montreal is a rainy place. Ohio, mid-Ohio, they get a lot of moisture in the summertime. So in order to run these venues and go ahead and get them done, I think that NASCAR has kind of been pressured to put the rain tires on. But the more they do it, the more data we get off of it. And when you get enough data, you'll be able to kind of integrate it into the other series as well.
Yes, and that's a possibility. You know, with the thing about with Bristol running there and running a rain tire, it's so hard for them to see around the turns as it is at Bristol. That if you add the aspect of rain on top of it and a rain tire, you are probably going to finish with about 10 cars if you get that many to finish the race.
I just had a visual on that, Richard. Please forget everything I just said after that visual in my head. I can only compare it to what they did at Charlotte many years ago with the All-Star race, and it was a lot worse. So
yeah.
I can visualize what's going on there, and definitely they definitely need some more work in building that technology in that department. Now, Richard, it was great having you on tonight, and like I said, it was kind of a last-minute deal, but for you to be able to come on the show and announce your driver, Mickey Trosclair, if you don't know him, guys, he's been turning heads a long time over here in the southeastern region, a great late model driver, street stock driver. I do believe Richard probably got to see him in his ex street stock car. Is that what he was driving when you met him?
I actually got to see him in that, and I got to see him in his crate late model.
The 521.
Yeah, the 521, racing in both of them, and I seen him winning both of them. And,
yes, sir.
What made me take notice to him was when I showed up and they had put a bounty on his head because he had won 5 races in a row. And so I said, okay, who is this guy? I need to pay more attention. And then he wins the next race and they, you know, they still had that bounty on his head, and it was an incentive for him. If he won the next 5 races, they were going to give him $500. And so I said, you know what, Big Easy Motorsports, this is what I'm going to do. if he wins the next five races, I'll give him another $500 on top of it. So, you know, unfortunately, it didn't happen. I guess you could say fortunately for me, I didn't have to give him another $500. But it didn't happen, but I enjoyed watching him. He's a great racer, and I think that we're going to go far with him, and he's got some talent, and he'll be able to showcase it throughout the country as we start the 2017 season.
Awesome, and great to have you on, Richard. Richard, I know that you've got some sponsors that are already helping you out. We'll give you a minute to get those out, and we just thank you for coming on the show here on Racing with Big Sweat. I wish you'd got to meet Steve tonight. He's normally my crew chief, but maybe next time you're on, you'll be able to have the pleasure of meeting him as well.
Well, I really would. Yeah, I've got a couple of sponsors that I haven't signed the paperwork with them yet, so we'll leave those off. But one of my sponsors is DBC Bar and Grill, which is at 1001 Veterans Avenue in Metairie. So if you're visiting the New Orleans area and you come out toward Metairie, go over to the DBC Bar and Grill. Those guys are great over there. They got some great daiquiris. They got a full kitchen over there. They on Thursday nights they have a hamburger steak that they do for like $9.99. On Wednesday nights they got a 14-ounce steak that they serve for like $15, and it comes with all the trimmings and everything. So that's one of the sponsors that's already signed up and come on board with us in the truck series as well as the late model series. So we look forward to promoting those guys, and we'll make some more announcements as the weeks come along, and we'll keep you informed.
I'll have to go down there to Metairie and try one of them steaks, man. You made my mouth water just then.
Okay.
Richard, hey, Jason, you got anything to close with, sir?
Now I'm instead of thinking about a steak. Now I'm in one.
We got food on our mind now. Well, Richard, thank you once again for coming on, and we hope to have you on again soon. And good luck on your business adventure.
I appreciate it, and one more thing real quick. With one of these sponsors I'm getting ready to sign, that's already agreed, like I said, we just got to get the paperwork details worked out. But this guy, there's an opportunity for me to help the dirt tracks and stuff that are in our region running with some of their concession stuff through this sponsor. So, if anybody happens to, and I'll make a future announcement, but if anybody is looking to inquire about how we can help them with their concessions through this sponsor, they can go to our page on Big Easy Motorsports on Facebook and reach out to me there. Or, 504-217-1000 is my number. They can reach out to me that way if any of these tracks or you guys know that, some people that would like to make some more money in concessions at their track, as well as, getting some promotion out there through the sponsor that we've got that we're getting ready to sign on. So
sounds great. Looking forward to hearing
more
about that
as
well. I know every racetrack is trying to make money, so maybe you have yourself a good little thing going there. And I can't wait to hear what the announcement is with that. Richard,
okay.
You have a great night, sir. And like I said earlier, thank you for coming on Racing with Big Sweat. And look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Thank you, sir. And I appreciate you having me, too.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Well, producer, what did you learn tonight?
Oh, goodness, I learned quite a few things. One, never do a show on an empty stomach. As soon as someone brings up food, you don't lose all track of mind. But no, seriously, just listen to his story and listening to his ideas and his opinions. And, you kind of get excited for the 2000. Here we are, and we still got another month and a half in the 2016 season, and I'm already excited about 2017 and already looking for someone to pull for and the Camping Truck World Series. So very, very exciting stuff, and, this was a lot more than I was even expecting tonight with everything kind of, coming together at the last moment and not knowing what we were getting into tonight. And then starting off the show the way I started the show off, It's going to be the way I did start the show off. And to have us finish the way we did and having Richard on and, of course, Caleb as well, it was definitely
we get the technical difficulty knocked out of the way, Jason, and everything goes easy. I tell you, there's one thing. We have mentioned Camping World Truck Series so many times tonight, and it's really crazy because Marcus Leomas is the one who kind of brought Camping World to what it is today. And he has a show on CNBC once a week, and you can catch the reruns as well, called The Prophet. And he really gets into a lot of what he uses to market his businesses and the businesses that he helps. Always have certain things that stand out. And Marcus was the turnaround of Camping World. And to bring that market to the truck series, to bring that kind of venue to the truck series, was really a genius move, and it was outside the box. But you think about it, every race that you go to, they're full of campers. And you have infields and tons of land with nothing but campers and camping people. And so, you know, with the idea that Richard has, it's integrating right into what Camping World Truck Series is. And it's a venue that shows up at different places. But his idea of franchising the truck and marketing it in his own city, which is a tourist city, it's probably one of the most genius ideas I've heard of in quite a while. And it reminds me of how Marcus Leomas runs his businesses. So maybe he's watching The Prophet, too, while he's putting all this together. And Marcus would be proud of how many times we've said Camping World Truck Series. I promise you, he would be.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely.
All right. Well, that was a show. I hope Steve's proud of us. And Steve, the last I'd heard, he's been ill. He's been in the hospital. So, Steve, get well. We miss you.
Yeah.
We did the show for you tonight, and we'll continue to do it. If Steve's not, I had to take the last couple weeks off, and I kind of missed you guys. The first week we had fantasy draft that was going a little bit too far or too long into it, and I didn't want to just come into the show late. And this past week, I got the flag. I was a flagman. Cautionelle Flaggerford showed up at a racetrack. And for those of you who don't know who Cautionelle Flaggerford is, it's fine. It was an idea that we had years ago, and it never come together. But Cautionelle Flaggerford made a return Thursday night, and I got to flag my very first race. And let me tell you something, Jason, before we go, I have a newfound respect for the man with the flags. I always knew it was a tough job. But, brother, until you're up there and until you try to throw a double-checker flag, you have no idea. And I'll tell you another thing. If you don't think that your back doesn't hurt, you should have seen how stiff I was trying to climb down those stairs at the end of the night when I'd been up standing in a flag stand for about 6 hours. It is a job, guys, and it's a job that should make more than what you make at McDonald's, $15 an hour. I'm not saying I got paid that because I didn't, but it's definitely a job. And for those of you, the next time you want to give your flagman any problems, I would suggest you didn't, because he's probably got a lot of back and forearm muscles by being doing what he does constantly. And I'll finish on that.
What was it like having full control of the field? I mean, each race and each restart was basically at the palm of your hands. What's it like to, try to make sure?
When I got asked the question, Jason, do you want the drivers to go on you or do you want them to go on the tire? I think I really realized at that point in time that I was in control of the race. And I said real quick, go on the tire. You know, I didn't want to make the mistake of thinking, oh, I'm going to make these drivers go when I want them to, you know. So I didn't want to jeopardize that, and so I gave the signal for them to go at the tire. But a lot of the hand signals and stuff, as a fan, you don't notice. You don't really watch a lot of the flag. You don't just flag the green flag and the checker flag. You have a courtesy flag that you've got to keep in mind. You've got to have that yellow flag right there and be ready to hit the lights. when something goes wrong. You have to count your laps. I mean, every time a car comes across the line, you've got to count that car because you can't lose track of the field. If a car's a lap down, that car's got to be given the courtesy flag. So you've got to keep the laps in mind as they're going around, which means you can't be distracted by something very long. It was a challenging job, and you don't just stand up there and wave a flag up in the air. You actually have to kind of lean over the flag stand. But Jason, one of the coolest things in the world was watching the driver stand up on that steering wheel coming out of turn four, and being able to look down into the cockpit and seeing them, manhandling that car. It definitely gave you a perspective that most people will never get to see.
I bet. Glad you had that experience. Maybe one day I'll be able to be up there. I don't know. I at least want to stand up there just to see what it's like to be up there. Outside of the one time I was on the flag stand once in my lifetime, my senior year of high school, we got to go to Atlanta. That's when it was the last race of the year. Gordon won the championship that year. The night before the race, we climbed the flag stand, and NASCAR officials or security quickly came over and decided you guys need to leave the you guys need to leave the racetrack. You're not supposed to be in here, and you're not supposed to be up on the flag stand. Needs to say, we got a big blown-up picture at my father's house of us up on the flag stand. But I would like to have that opportunity to be up there during the race just to get the experience from that angle and get the view from that angle. But, Chris, last tonight, I'm glad that you were able to be my co-pilot on this adventure tonight, and I'm looking forward to being back here Thursday night. Hopefully we got Steve in the studio next Thursday, and I can go back to the producing side of the house. But either way, next Thursday we'll be back here one way or the other. Go ahead and throw out what you got going on, where they can follow you, what they can follow, what you got going on.
Well, we're off for the weekend. We won't be back in business. Really, race season around here is winding down. It's a lot of big races. We're taking the weekend off, but if you are in the Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, Georgia, Tennessee area, ride on up to Columbus, Mississippi. It is the 20th annual cotton picking at Magnolia Motor Speedway. I may have the annual part wrong, but it's the cotton picking race, and it's a big time event. There'll be a lot of big late model drivers there. Billy Moyer Jr. will be there, along with several other big name fellas. And it's the end of the year closeout event, and hopefully you'll be there. They're having open practice tonight, and then they'll run into their heats and qualifying tomorrow, and feature races and B mains on Saturday. So if you have a chance, go on up to Magnolia Motor Speedway for the Cotton Picking 100. And you can follow us on Flag of Caution on Twitter and Yellow Caution Flag, or Chris Creighton, Yellow Caution Flag on Facebook, and also on Instagram at Flag of Caution. So we appreciate everybody listening in, and Mr. CJ Sports for giving us the opportunity, 110 Sports Nation Sports, and Snafu Seasoning. Also, we have a couple of syndicated broadcasters. Jason, will you give those out for us?
Yes, you guys can. I got a shout-out. I also got to thank Fit for Life, being part of the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network. And I got to thank I-95 Sports Network and Maha Radio for rebroadcasting or syndicating our shows, however you want to say it. I say it both ways because I don't know what the way it's supposed to be said, but it's the same meaning to it. But I got to thank them for helping us continuously grow. We've also jumped on the Satchel, I guess how you pronounce it, SATCHEL platform, where they basically syndicate our podcast on their app as well. So glad to be part of that as well. Just continuously growing, so very excited about that. Don't forget, you guys, to check out the 110 Nation Sports Show every Monday through Wednesday. Got a lot of great drivers on our show as well, just like we had Gus Dean. If you're not familiar with him, he won Talladega in the ARCA Series, and more commonly also known for the driver that was at Pocono that had the brake issues on pit road and ended up hitting the crew guy that bounced off the front of windshield of his car, if that rings a bell for anybody. We had him on last night. I will be out of Kentucky tomorrow night for the ARCA Series race and Saturday night for the Xfinity Series race. If you guys happen to be out there, hit me up. You can hit me on Twitter, at CJSports1. You can hit me up on my personal fan page, Mr. CJ Sports. I'd love to have the opportunity to meet and greet. Also, check us out on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports.
All right. And, hey, don't forget about the iTunes. You can find us on iTunes on podcast, and it's a really cool way. My dad told me about it. A couple of other people told me about it. You can go to podcast, look up 110 Nation Sports, and all of Mr. CJ Sports' episodes are on your iTunes podcast. So you can download those to your phone. It doesn't cost you any data once you've downloaded it, and you can listen to the show as many times as you like. If you're looking for the Racing with Big Sweat, go to Racing with Big Sweat once you're in the 110 Nation podcast, and you'll find us. And you can listen to us every Thursday night, or you can listen to us on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back again next weekend, next Thursday night. Same bat time, same bat place, and get well, crew chief. We miss you.
You guys have a great night.
Bye-bye.